now.
Yeah, and that revolution starts right now. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show, and we're here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Paradise Community Guild. Fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guild invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help us carry out that intent. To get involved, visit paradiseguild.org. You can also find them on Facebook, and you can also give them a call at 762-1490. So here we are, barely into the third week of the new year, and there is already a great need for people to actively participate in making our community a better place to live. Unfortunately, for communities across the country and right here in Butte County and in Chico, the pandemic destroyed so much of the volunteering culture across the nation. The years of isolation from our community became the new normal as we replaced in-person gatherings with Zoom calls. And for most of us, even those of us who really like to be alone, the long period of isolation was not good for our mental health. And it was not good for our politics, and it is not good for our communities. So honestly, one of my New Year's resolutions is to get out of my pandemic rut and to get back into community activities. Personally, I took a trip over the holidays very, very, very specifically to shake off the pandemic energy. And I really did return with my, you know, getting ready back with my regular volunteer activities, especially as we get ready for the 2024 election cycle. I do want to mention, I hope that you know that politics never, ever stops, and we are always working towards the next election. So, yeah, we just started 2023, but we are always focusing on the next election, especially if you want to have a good, healthy democracy. So tonight on The Real Issue, we will talk about two important opportunities for you to get involved in local efforts. You can even look at these local efforts as one small step towards getting out of that pandemic rut, in case you need help with that. So during the first part of The Real Issue, we will talk with one of the main organizers behind the Chico referendum to reverse the Chico City Council's decision to approve the Valley's Edge development. He'll talk about what it's all about and how you can get involved in some of that work. Then, during the second part of The Real Issue, we will talk about the annual point in time count that is happening next week across the country and right here in Butte County. The Housing and Homeless Administrator with the Butte County Department of Employment and Social Services, Brianna Harvey Butterfield, will talk about how the count is conducted, how the data will be used, and how you can get involved in the data collection next week. That count across the country happens next week, Wednesday, on January 25th. So to begin, I have on the phone with me one of the organizers of that referendum effort, and they seek to reverse the decision of the conservative Chico City Council that just a few weeks ago greenlit the development of the sprawling Valley's Edge project, David Welsh. As always, I'm happy and grateful to have you back to The Real Issue, David Welsh.
Always a pleasure, Sue. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So, okay, so for folks, as a quick reminder, the Valley's Edge project would cover about 1,500 acres in Southeast Chico, located between East 20th Street and the Skyway from Stilson Canyon Road to Honey Run Road. And although it is designed for mixed use and a variety of housing options, it is considered a low-density residential area with housing costs in excess of what most Chicoans can afford. In the end of this whole development, 2,777 units are scheduled to be built, which, to put this in context, this is larger than the city of Gridley, which is just 30 miles south of Chico. If you drive down 99, down from Sacramento or Yuba City up to Chico, you're going to go through Gridley. And it's not a big city, but it is not a tiny city at all. And that's what would be built right onto Chico. So, David Welsh, before we talk about what you're doing, I want to ask you to talk about who's behind this effort. I know you're part of a coalition of organizations. Who's doing this?
Yeah, it's a pretty broad coalition. I think the first group of people who were really paying attention to this from an early stage and talk about it were an organization that's been around for a while, Smart Growth Chico, which is really focused on just what it sounds like, trying to encourage our community to grow in ways that are more ecologically sustainable and more financially sustainable than the kind of suburban sprawl that has become reflexive in modern America for a lot of people, and helping people to understand that that's not the only way or necessarily the best way for people to live. So that group's been around for a while, Smart Growth Chico. Then as this coalition came together, it includes Butte Environmental Council, it has included Sierra Club people, it's included Audubon Society people and Native Plant Society people and just general sort of urbanist activist kinds of people. And so it's a fairly broad coalition of people and people who come to it for different reasons too, I think.
And we're going to get into some of those reasons right now. So you listed, and you said that there's more, but you listed five organizations right there, and I know that that coalition is growing every day. David Welsh, talk about, you know, why this coalition, individually the groups or whatever, but there's a whole list of reasons that you object to this particular development. Give us an overview of these reasons.
Right. And to be really honest, many of the people who come from the kind of naturalist organizations, you know, the folks whose interests are really focused on, say, native plants, birds, water issues, things like that. Those folks know things and have reasons that I know very little about, don't feel very, very comfortable talking about, but there's definitely going to be impact on a whole host of wildlife, plants, variety of things like that. My own personal interest, and I think a lot of us, the one place where a lot of us come together is the understanding that to truly have a livable planet, to be able to accomplish what we need to accomplish to stop the impending disaster of human-caused climate change, we really need to rethink the way that we make our cities, the way we live. And we need to start thinking in terms of living in more compact ways. And that a auto-centric development that effectively requires virtually everyone to drive everywhere they go on relatively wide streets at relatively high speeds is just not compatible with a livable planet, and that in fact we can have a much more pleasant and livable community, a more enjoyable community to live in when we get away from some of that sprawl, when we get out of our cars, when we encounter our neighbors and friends on the streets, when we are able to, for example, walk to our local coffee shop or walk to a grocery store in a convenient way without having to be athletes or anything to do
right,
that.
Right.
That really creates a whole different kind of community, a more livable community, a happier community, a more integrated community where people encounter each other in positive ways. And, you know, as we know, a lot of times our encounters with other human beings in cars are often not very positive.
Right.
And our encounters on the sidewalk are often a lot more positive. And so I think that we need to really be rethinking. And it's not really a new way of thinking. It's getting back to an old way of thinking. Up until World War II, so much of our cities were built around the concept of being able to either walk or bicycle or take transit to places where you went. You had your local, you know, you had your local coffee shop, you had your local bar, you had your local restaurant, you had your local store. And most of that stuff was within walking distance for a great many people. And then in the aftermath of World War II, we really moved away from that, and that's where we began to have the sprawling development, beginning with the Levitt towns and the like in the Northeast and spreading out from there. And we really need to make a return. If we're going to accomplish what we need to accomplish regarding climate change, we need to get back to much more of that other way of developing.
David Welsh, it's funny that you brought up Levittown, because I was going to, and the reason I was going to is because my grandparents lived in Levittown, New York, and it's one of those communities that most people don't realize what it is. But and there's an amazing documentary about Levittown, New York, and so for folks that aren't familiar with it, you know, World War II, the entire economy was geared towards making planes and ammunition and uniforms. Our entire economy was built to do that, and then the war ended, and so it was turned on to domestic products, those washing machines and cars. And so instead of sharing washing machines, for example, everybody needed a washing machine in their own home, and Levittown was the first planned neighborhood in the entire country. And so it really is based on, how do we sell stuff to people? Well, the first thing is you make them live far enough apart where they need their own washing machine, for example. And that's what's happened. Yeah, David Welsh, you're exactly right. I hadn't quite thought of it. Yeah, so what it sounds like what your coalition is thinking in terms of, let's roll back even before World War II, where we actually developed around communities and we shared resources and things like that. Yeah.
You know, and when you spend some time in communities that developed and that established their footprint before the automobile became king, you see a whole different way of living. And that doesn't mean that we have to all live in apartments, but I think we do have to live in more compact housing with more, you know, where a given house might have a small lot, but where a neighborhood would have more shared space.
Yes, yes.
You know, think in terms of like perhaps a thing I see when I've traveled in other countries a bit is, you see, for example, you may have a neighborhood where people lived in very, very compact houses, and yet there is an area where that is split up and everybody can have their individual vegetable garden on this one plot of land.
Right.
And it gives people a place where they can do their vegetable gardening, and at the same time they get to encounter their neighbors while they're there. Rather than being alone in their backyard, they get to say hi to the guy down the street who's out working in his plot.
Right. Right. Yeah, and then we have these parks, and we can actually get out and rebuild community that we've lost over the last, you know, half century of the 20th century. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have David Welsh on the phone with me. He is one of the lead organizers of an effort here in Chico that opposes the Chico City Council's approval, green lighting of the building of Valley's Edge development over in Southeast Chico.
You know, something else I want to say about this before it goes further is that Chico's growing, and it's going to grow. And nobody in our coalition is opposed to the idea that this community is going to grow and that it will need more housing. There are lots of places within the existing urban footprint where more housing can be built. But what we don't want to see is artificially induced growth.
Yes.
Natural growth is one thing. The community is going to grow. People will be born here. People will move here. Those kinds of things. But this project is really designed to create growth, to induce growth by building expensive homes and then advertising them to, for example, retirees from the Bay Area who have a you know, a house they bought a long time ago. They're able to sell that house for a high price because it's in the Bay Area, and they can move up here and buy a larger luxury house on a large piece of land that they can afford because the prices in Chico are lower. And so this is not building housing for the people who are here. This is building housing for people from somewhere else, by and large. And it's building in order to induce growth. Yeah. The local building industry has actually been, and sometimes they've let slip and been fairly open in public forums, in saying that they can't make the money they want to make building housing for people who live in Chico. They need to induce wealthier people to come here so that they can sell them more expensive housing.
And the irony of, as I listen to you, David Welsh, is that the Political Action Committee, Citizens for a Safe Chico, received I think that they had about $250,000 that they spent on winning local Chico City Council races, and so many of their donors were these very developers, and the lies and rhetoric that came out of Citizens for a Safe Chico were, don't vote for those progressive candidates because they're from the Bay Area and they want to do dastardly things to our community. But on the other hand, that's what they're doing. They needed to secure power on the Chico City Council so that they could approve this ridiculous development that nobody in Chico can currently afford, so that they can bring in those folks from the Bay Area. So I guess only Bay Area people are welcome if they have a whole bunch of money.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you know, here's an interesting, I just had a conversation this morning with a member of the Chico Unified School District School Board. And she said that she had been talking to somebody just yesterday who said, aren't you excited about this, that there's the project is going to dedicate a plot of land for an elementary school down there? And her response was that we really don't think there will need to be an elementary school down there because we don't expect this project to generate a lot of school children because the houses are going to be too expensive for young families.
Oh, right.
You know, young families can't afford houses like this.
And it's not going to be, there aren't going to be enough students really to generate that kind of need. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. That's an interesting observation. David Welsh, let's keep moving because I know you're a busy guy. Let's talk about the process. Before we get into this particular referendum, I think a lot of folks skipped class when the professor or the teacher talked about political referendums. Talk about what a referendum is, what it does, just in big broad terms for those of us that were sleeping or didn't come to class that day.
All right. Well, I'll give you real fast. You know, this really dates from the early 20th century, the progressive movement in California trying to take back power for the people from what they saw as a corrupt legislature. And unfortunately, in some ways, it had kind of a corrupt result. But they created three kinds of citizen ballot measures in California, one of which is the recall to remove someone from office. One is the initiative that allows citizens to write legislation and put it on the ballot to bypass the legislature. And then the third one is the referendum, which allows citizens to overturn something that a legislative body has done. That can be done at the city level, at the county level, at the state level. And it's simply what it does if one is able to get a sufficient number of signatures. And in this case, at the city level, interestingly, the hurdle is higher at the city level than it is at the county or state level. We need 10% of the registered voters in the city. If we get that 10%, as I am increasingly confident that we will do, then the legislative body, in this case the city council that passed it, basically has a choice. They can rescind what they've done and just say, okay, we won't do that, or they can put it on the ballot. And so that's basically it. It either, and I think in this case they will put it on a ballot, and so it will basically give the people an opportunity to vote on it.
And what would be the time frame of, I'm taking it all in. So the city, if if enough signatures are collected, then the legislative body, again, that would be the Chico City Council, could say, okay, never mind. Or they could say, yeah, well, we'll ask all of the voters what they're going to do. What's the time frame for doing that? How much does that legislative body, how much time do they have to make that decision?
Well, my impression is, and I don't know this for absolutely certain, but what I believe is that they can schedule an election at least 88 days out, but I believe they can wait long. If they want to be economical, what they would do is, and I believe they can, just sort of put the whole thing on hold and wait all the way until the 2024 election to put it on the ballot.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Or they could schedule a special election for it that has to be, again, at least 88 days out, but I believe, again, can be longer. And my understanding of this, and I haven't read the documents, so I don't know, but what I've been told is that in the development agreement is a condition that apparently if the council were to schedule a special election, the developer would pay the cost of it rather than the taxpayers.
The developer would pay the cost of the election itself?
Yes.
And so we have to assume at this point that these are very deep-pocketed developers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, presumably
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
Spend a lot of money.
Yes, so, indeed.
So that again, I'm not 100% certain of that, but that's what somebody who has read all the documents is holding that.
Well, if that's the case, I would guess that they would hold out until the summer when nobody's paying attention. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. David Welsh, I'm trying to move through this. Again, I know you're a busy guy. So you gave us kind of the general overview of what a referendum is. Let's talk about your organization's effort. First of all, let's get down to it. How you said 10% of registered voters have to sign this petition. They have to be valid signatures, all of that. What is the number? What's the actual number that you have to have?
My understanding is in the neighborhood of 5,600 valid signatures. And of course, we always want to get a significant cushion above that. But that's the number of valid signatures that are required.
And what,
I forget the exact number, but it's right around there.
Okay, so about 5,600. And what's the time frame? I read someplace that you all started collecting signatures this past weekend. How much time do you have to collect those 5,600?
A total of 30 days.
Holy
until
moly.
February 13th.
That's...
So it's a very tight timeline. It's moving very fast. At this point, I am very pleased and optimistic based on the number of people who have been coming in to pick up petitions, the number of people who've been volunteering, and the rate at which petitions are coming back in is pretty exciting. It feels, to me, it feels pretty darn good. And we are so far doing this entirely with volunteers. And the number of people in this community who are disturbed enough by this thing that they want to volunteer is kind of astonishing to me. But, you know, that's feeling really good. So if you don't mind, I could just talk a little bit about how people could get involved.
Well, actually, what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I am watching the clock. You can tell people how they can get involved, but I want to make sure people know what they're committing to. And what I mean by that is, you told us what the referendum is. If it's successful, these are the legislative body's two options. But let's be really specific. If your organization is successful, you get enough signatures. What does this referendum actually say, and what is it calling for?
What a referendum does is it cancels the action that the city council has taken. Now it's a little bit complex because the city passed a whole array of things. It was all a package. It all needed to be done. There isn't anything nefarious about this, but there's multiple different things that they passed. And what they passed, the two things that we are referending are the Valley's Edge specific plan and an amendment to the general plan associated with that. So those are two separate things that the city council passed. And again, if we're successful in getting the signatures, as I believe we will be, this would then can't either outright cancel those, depending on what the city chooses to do, or put them on the ballot for the people to approve or reject.
Got it. And so you are feeling confident that you're going to get enough signatures, but that's probably dependent on getting enough volunteers to actually collect those signatures. So
that's
now,
true.
Right, so now tell us, how can people get involved?
Okay, so what we need is more, and we have a surprising number, but we need more volunteer signature gatherers. And this could be, there's really three ways one can do this. One can, the two slightly more difficult ways, one is you can, as many people and most anyone in California has seen this, you can go out into public places, you know, on a sidewalk downtown, on the sidewalk outside the farmer's market, at various special events, things like that. And you can engage the people who are coming and going and ask them to sign your petition. That's one. Two, we're going to do some, we are doing some door-to-door work in selected neighborhoods, going door-to-door and asking people to sign. And then if either of those things sounds a little too intimidating, the other one that is much less intimidating for people is simply to take a petition and get your friends, family, neighbors, whatever, to sign on that. And we have very good, really good people who are doing training people in how to do it to make sure that the petitions are valid and all that sort of thing. And so it can be done at whatever level of intensity or engagement you want to do it.
And where can people get connected with you and the organization and figure out how to plug in?
Really easy. The Butte Environmental Council is allowing us to use some office space, and that's open. Well, their office is 313 Walnut. Walnut, for those who don't realize it, is Highway 32, where it's passing along the west side of downtown there. So 313 Walnut, a landmark that a lot of people know, it's right next door to Azad's Martial Arts Center that's been there for quite a while. So that's between 3rd and 4th Street on Walnut. And our office hours there, the office hours for our effort are separate from Butte Environmental Council's own office hours. Our office hours there are from noon to 6 every single day. We're there every day of the week from noon to 6, and you can stop in. If you just want to sign a petition, you can come in and sign a petition. If you want to pick up a petition, you can pick up a petition to take it out and get signed. And I think that's just a great way to get started, is come on in there. We will also have a very visible presence at the Saturday Farmers Market for the next 3 weeks. And we'll very much be out there in force.
My last question for you, if somebody is going to be at the farmer's market on Saturday, is there a way to pick up a petition and get a quick training on the spot, or is it really important to go to Beck?
We're going to try and do that at the farmer's market also.
Okay.
So yes, I expect we will be able to do that at the farmer's market. But it might get a little overwhelming if too many people try to do that. But coming by the Beck office is ideal if you can do that. But certainly, if you're coming to the farmer's market on Saturday anyway and you want to get a petition, that's great.
David Welsh, thank you once again for giving me some time. Again, I know you're busy, and I'm only 2 minutes over time to let you go when we agreed on a time. Thanks again, and we'll bring you back in a few weeks to figure out how what the progress is on this effort.
All right, Sue. Thanks a lot.
Thank
Bye.
You. All right, we're going to take a really, really quick break, and when we come back, I did speak with the housing and homeless administrator at the county, Butte County Employment and Social Services, Brianna Harvey Butterfield. We talked earlier today. She is so busy that she couldn't give me a live conversation, so we pre-recorded it this morning. And she's going to talk about the point in time count. As I mentioned, in a lot of ways, the pandemic really did some serious damage on our emotional health, on our mental health, and really on our political system because it's hard to engage, it's hard to work together, it's hard to come together and really imagine the future, imagine a better future, imagine how we can participate in it and actually participating in it. So this is why I asked David Welsh to talk about the work that he's doing on this referendum to give you an opportunity to step up and maybe get back. We're going to do it safely, of course, but then also talking with Brianna Harvey Butterfield about the point in time count, if that's what's interesting to you. I had a great conversation with her and she'll explain everything. So don't go away. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio.
I was big and really big. In fact, he was a giant. It was smaller, much by far, but not quite microscopic. His name was Davy, the short one, the big guy was Goliath. I don't read the Bible much, in fact, it's more like never. But I still think it's really cool that Davy kicked his butt. Sometimes Davy wins, sometimes Davy wins, sometimes Davy wins, sometimes Davy wins, sometimes Davy wins. The real estate executive called him to the home office. He said, what a place, what a really great place, Eureka, we struck gold. All the people gathered round, they yelled, you gotta go, son. We do not need your Wally World, in fact, we can be no fun. Take your big fat assets to another piece of ground. Sometimes they win, sometimes they win, sometimes they win, sometimes they win, sometimes they win. Eureka, California is a town without a Walmart. Think that card they got instead might be on your next Hallmark. And I know of a gardener guy who lives up in a redwood. He's been up there for 2 years now, and that's enough for me.
We are back. That was Laura Love, Sometimes Davy Wins. That was requested by my friend Karen. Thank you so much. And she wanted that to be dedicated to the young folks in particular that are really working on this referendum, keeping it organized, keeping it moving forward. All right, so you are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio, based right here in Chico, California. My name is Sue Hildebrand. It is that time again when the point in time count is conducted here in Butte County and across the country. It just in case, I don't know how you don't know, but just in case you don't know what the point in time count is, it is a window of time that communities across the country go out and they count the number of folks who are unhoused in their community. The results of the data collection is used by various levels of government to figure out the causes of this of the homeless crisis, as well as what public policies are needed to actually address the problem. It's an all-volunteer effort, and they locally, the local effort is looking for volunteers to get involved in this critical, it's such an important effort. And again, it's an opportunity for you to bust right out of your pandemic rut and get back into the community if you haven't done so already. This morning, I spoke with Housing and Homeless Administrator at the Butte County Department of Employment and Social Services, Brianna Harvey Butterfield. She couldn't give me a live interview because she is busy training people and getting organized for next Wednesday, January 25th, when the point in time count will be conducted. Welcome back to The Real Issue, Brianna Harvey Butterfield. It's so good to have you back here.
Thank you for having me, Sue. Happy to be here.
So before we get into how listeners can get involved in the point in time count, I want to focus for a minute on exactly what it is. And there's actually two different versions of the point in time count that they alternate from year to year. So first, explain the difference between the two of them and which one is going to be conducted next Wednesday, January 25th.
Okay, so we conduct a sheltered point in time count annually, so every year. We complete an unsheltered count, so that is going out into the community and totaling the number of folks who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness on a single night, and that is conducted every other year. So we did complete both the unsheltered and sheltered pit last year in 2022, if you remember. And that really was because we had missed our year due to COVID the year prior. And so this year is our back on track of the completing the unsheltered count on the odd years. And so you will see us complete the unsheltered count from here. And then the next year that we complete it will be 2025.
Okay. You said the unsheltered count is when you actually go out into the community and you talk with folks that are, you know, living at unauthorized encampments and things like that. And so what exactly is the sheltered count?
Yeah, so the sheltered count is we partner with our communities that have emergency shelters and transitional housing type facilities. And so we see, so that is of course not considered permanent housing. And so we coordinate and we take a count of folks who we know are looking for and the permanent housing.
Okay. And then just to be clear, next Wednesday on the 25th, it will be the unsheltered count. And so people will be trained and you will be going out into the community.
Yeah, we actually do them both simultaneously, but our volunteers that we're looking for are primarily for the unsheltered count.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, so, you know, people will go out and they will be directed to go someplace and they'll be talking with folks that have found themselves homeless or have been in a state of homelessness for any length of time. Talk about what information is being collected this year and compare that to what was collected last year. Has it changed a whole lot or is it the same type of data that's being collected?
It really is the same type of data. We actually do have a point-in-time committee through the local continuum of care that works on and evaluates the questions. This year, they thought that to keep the questions very consistent last year, and still, I know we are still faced with COVID, but, you know, last year was a very difficult year, and so it truly was a good opportunity for us to jump right back into another unsheltered count so we can make sure that we're getting the most accurate information. And so again, the questions are very similar to last year, very minor differences.
And what are the questions? I mean, I would imagine it's basic demographics, you know, gender and numbers and age and things like that. What other kinds of things might be interesting to collect?
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. We do collect the basic demographic information. And then we're also asking some like health related questions. And so we dive in to see if there's like a developmental disability or if the person, has a chronic health condition, mental health problem, physical disability. That we also then ask some like school and work related questions. We ask if they are a victim of domestic violence, if they're a veteran. And finally, we do have some local questions that are more specific to our process here. So we want to understand what type of housing and sheltering options people would be interested in, what they think has led to their homelessness, so that we can help, find ways to make changes locally, what barriers they may be experiencing that prevents them from accessing housing. And then we also ask, what kind of services they would be interested in. And that really helps us plan for providing that the services in the future.
What's interesting is that, there are pretty common characteristics that people that are homeless share. I mean, I there's a bunch of them. I mean, victims of domestic violence and mental health issues and drug use and so on and so on. And so it after you listed all of that kind of data that you're collecting, sort of sounds obvious. It's like, oh yeah, of course you would ask those kinds of questions and to figure out what kinds of services are needed. Let me just mention that if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Brianna Harvey Butterfield on the phone with me. She is the Housing and Homeless Administrator with Butte County Department of Employment and Social Services. I do want to mention to listeners, if you're a regular listener to The Real Issue, you know Brianna Harvey Butterfield from last year when we had this conversation, but she has since been promoted to the Housing and Homeless Administrator. So it's so nice to have you back here. Okay, so you're collecting all of the data. Now you're going to be collecting data all of Wednesday, January 25th. Once it's collected, where do you send this data and how is it ultimately used?
So once it's collected, we do compile the data and we submit it to HUD primarily. So all of the demographic data out of the point in time questions, kind of the first set are required HUD questions. So HUD is the Department of Housing and Urban Development. But we also complete a local point-in-time report to share the additional information from the other questions that we've added for the community. And so that's really to assist our local providers in having information, that's incredibly important for them, applying for grants, or applying or coming up with a program to assist those that they're serving. And we typically have the local report completed spring, summer. HUD actually just released their numbers at the end of last year for 2022. So it does take them a little bit to get it out, but we preemptively provide that to the community through the continuum of care spring and summer.
Which makes sense. If you have your own data, you can analyze your own data. And then if communities across this country are sending in data around the same time to the federal agency, of course, it's going to take them quite a bit longer. Brianna Harvey Butterfield, this is an all-volunteer effort, except for you, who is overseeing the whole effort, and other folks in your department and continuum of care folks. But it's basically an all-volunteer effort. Do you have it all under control, or are you still looking for volunteers to help next Wednesday, the 25th?
We are still looking for volunteers. If folks are interested, they could go to the Butte Countywide Continuum of Care website And there is a link on the front page that they can register. So I will share with you that we are doing our final in-person training today. However, if folks are interested, if they in the registration, there's a little note section. And so if they can add that, you know, they hadn't had a chance to complete the training, we will connect with them and provide them some training. So we want to make sure that, you know, we can definitely use the help, and we'll make sure that training is provided prior to next Wednesday.
So, Brianna, let's talk about that for a minute. Before somebody might be thinking, okay, my interest is piqued. I might be willing to get trained to do this. Explain what exactly is being asked. What would somebody be asked to do? And, you know, are there shifts throughout the day? That kind of thing.
So within the registration, they could identify the hours that they can work. If they are available all day and are interested in participating all day, then that's wonderful as well. But they will connect with us the morning of the 25th. We have different locations where they will meet, and we will partner folks up and give them all of the equipment. And then they will be given a map to go to a certain region within our community that they will start searching for folks. And, you know, as they find people, begin the interviews. We do have an appreciation of a $10 food card for folks to hand out. And new this year for our team, we are also providing a food voucher. So we have food trucks that are scheduled to be at all of, like, at the major locations. So one in Chico, one in Oroville, one in Paradise, and then there will be food provided at a hub location in Gridley.
That's new. That's exciting.
Yes, and I just wanted to note that once volunteers are done, they'll come back to the hub location, and then depending on where we are that day, we may, if they have the time and they're interested, we may provide another map to see if they want to go to a different area, and then if not, they'll just return the equipment to us, and we will, you know, sincerely thank them for their time.
And Brianna Harvey Butterfield, what is the training? I mean, I think listeners now understand that we have a homeless crisis throughout the state, and Butte County is no exception. And this is a way to contribute to the understanding and actually addressing our crisis of homelessness. If somebody says, okay, what I'm willing to do it, but I don't feel comfortable yet. I'm still not clear. What would be in the training where somebody could say, if I go through this training, I will be fully prepared to participate in the point in time count?
Okay. So within the training itself, we go through that we use an application for collecting the information. And so we go into a lot of detail about how to log on to the application. We go question by question so folks are comfortable with the material. Within the training, we also have information about what to expect, what we will be providing that day, and ways of which you would conduct yourself in different circumstances. And so I really think it's a good holistic training. We also note within the registration and ask folks if they have either participated before or worked with the homeless population. And if they haven't, that is A-okay. We'll just make sure to partner them with people that do have that experience.
Wonderful. I think that could be an obstacle for somebody jumping right in. So that's encouraging. You know, one of the things that every time I've covered this topic, and I've here at The Real Issue, we've been covering this topic for, I think, at least, I think my first program was about 2011. So over a decade, we've been covering this topic. And one of the things about the point in time count is that it's notorious for undercounting. Because of the population, the unsheltered population is hard to find. There is no address by definition. And so it is notorious for being undercounted. Now, I want to just give you one more opportunity to do a recruitment effort for more volunteers. It seems that the more volunteers there are, the more likely we will be able to identify and to gather data from folks that are unsheltered so that we can, in a very informed way, address this crisis.
Yes, absolutely. A successful point in time count absolutely needs a lot of volunteers. It's the power of the people, so to speak, to make sure that we're getting all of the geographical areas covered. And it takes time when you're working directly with people and going through some questions. If there's any interest, we would definitely appreciate the assistance of additional volunteers.
Yeah, and it's simply a way to humanize the other. I've got little air quotes going to humanize the other. I mean, these are our community members. And it's about how do we build better community. So one last time, Brianna Harvey Butterfield, give us an address, a website address where people can say, yep, if I'm not ready to volunteer, at least I'm willing to learn more about this.
Yes. If you visit www.butehomelesscoc.com, and on the front page, about halfway down, scroll a little down, there is a Get Involved link. And you click there, and it'll allow you to register for this year's unsheltered point in time count.
Housing and Homeless Administrator with Butte County Department of Employment and Social Services, Brianna Harvey Butterfield. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Sue.
All right. Well, this brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue. I hope that it gives you two opportunities to get back into the swing of it. We need folks to get out and again reengage in the community, because we are Chico and the rest of Butte County. We are such an amazing community because we are proactive. We do like to stand arm in arm and figure out the future and work together. It took me a while to kind of get out of my pandemic funk, but I think I'm out. And if you're not out yet, I do hope that you join me soon. All right, this edition of The Real Issue was made possible by the generous contributions of KCFR supporters and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high-tech auto body specializing auto body shop specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. Knockout Collision works on all makes and models and always provides complimentary consultations. Appointment or information can be found by calling 899-9202. You can also find them online at knockoutcollisionrepair.com. Chico's fast and fair collision repair. All right. Up next is going to be Faith in Common Ground. I will say right this minute, though, this is FM 90.1 KCFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And The Real Issue will be back here next week, same time, same amazing community station.
Just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. We'll go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your lover, cause your heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down on our town? good night. Up the street beside the red neon light, that's where I met my baby on one hot summer night. He was the tender and who ordered a beer. It's been 40 years and I'm still sitting here. Just like they say, nothing could ever last. We'll go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your lover, cause your heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down on our town, on our town? Good night. I've walked down Main Street in the cold morning mist. Over there is where I bought my first car. It turned over once, but then it never went far. And I can see the sun setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. We'll go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your lover, cause your heart's bound to die. Up the street beside the pretty brick wall. I bring them flowers about every day, but I just gotta cry when I think what they'd say. If they could see how the sun's setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever